Hello and welcome to the Rest is Football question and answer episode with Alan Shearer, Micah Richards and me, Gary Lineker. Lots of brilliant questions again. Thank you so much for sending them in. Let's get cracking. I want to start with this one actually because it's quite an interesting topic. It's from Chris Evans. Now, I don't know whether that's the DJ Chris Evans or the broadcaster or even Captain America. I suspect it's neither, but... The question is, it was released this week that Premier League clubs have spent £409 million on agent fees in the last year and £2.3 billion in the past 9 years. What do you make of these sort of figures being spent on agents, and what was your own experience of agents like? Well, my experience of my agent was certainly different to that. In those days, the player paid the agent, Alan.
Am I right in saying at the top of that list with Chelsea around about £75 million?
Yeah, I prepared for this. I got the actual list.
70-odd million pound on agents' fees. Whoever the agents are, by the way, they've swam the channel because some of those players they've given Chelsea. My goodness.
Well, not only that, I've got the top 10, actually. It's mad. £287 million, Chelsea. £286 million, Manchester City. £230 million, Liverpool. £212 million, Manchester United. £125 million, drops a bit there, Arsenal. Still a staggering amount of money. Tottenham, £106 million. Everton, £103 million. West Ham, £94 million. Leicester, my club in the top 10, £79 million, and Newcastle 2, Alan, on £74 million.
Where's that from?
It's from February 2015 to February 2024, so 10 years included. This is a kind of a little bit of a bugbear of mine. I think it's ludicrous, and the reason it happens is because clubs are desperate to sign players, so there's a kind of auction effect. And at the moment, and this is ridiculous, that it is possible for a selling club, the buying club, and the footballer to all be represented by the same agent on the same deal. Now, that is open to me to an extraordinary conflict of interest, obviously. How football has allowed this to happen, I don't know. How UEFA, FIFA, even the Premier League don't bring in a rule that football clubs cannot pay a footballer's agent. It's simple as that. The footballer has to pay his agent's fee because at the moment, the footballers are being ripped off and the clubs are being ripped off because they've got them by the short and curlies. And it seems a simple thing to do for me. But obviously now you've got a world where it's a bit underground. There's a lot of good agents, but there are a lot of very, very unscrupulous ones as well. And they're manipulating it and they're taking astonishing amounts of money from football clubs. And it's wrong. And I don't think players have any... The agent will say to the player, he'll say, I've done the deal with the club. The club is paying my fees. You don't have to pay me anything.
Absolutely,
and that is
right.
Bullshit. Because the truth is, there's an overall pot of money that the club is prepared to pay. And their agent's taking way more than they should be. And the players are naive in this. And I think it's something that game really needs to address.
Did you only just understand that when you retired and finished, or were you ahead of that and thinking like that when you were playing?
It's changed a lot since I was playing, Alan. I think I can't recall that in my day. I paid my agent's fees. I mean, sometimes you'd be with your agent negotiating with the football club. The agent, might say get a little bit more on the deal, and then so therefore he'll get a little bit more money. But there's no way that my agent at any stage has gone to the club on his own and said, right, my fee for this, if you want to make it happen, is 10 million quid or a million quid or whatever it would be. But that's become the new norm. How can you act for all parties in a deal? It's so open to corruption.
I think it's an absolute minefield. And it's also difficult to police, because who is someone to tell you that you can't use a family member whether the family member is an experienced agent or is just or not, yeah, or whatever, but yeah. Who's to say, well, you're not, your brother or your dad or your mum, whoever it is, cannot represent you in any deal? Yeah, it's an absolute minefield.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they've got agents' exams, they've got this and that and the other, but they've really struggled to police it. They've tried putting down a leverage of an amount of money over the years. but they've really struggled to police it.
What it should be is that the footballer, after the deal, then pays his agent. Simple as that.
Yeah, I totally agree.
All they've got to do, a football club should not be allowed to pay an agent directly for his involvement for one of his players' transfers. Simple as that. I mean, they might find ways around it. I don't know, but that's dodgy dealings and then that's untoward. But Mike, I mean, obviously you're much more recent to the game than either Alan and myself.
Yeah, I think I paid my agent's fees. So how it worked was I'd agreed a 5-year deal and I would pay my agent 5% of my deal.
Yeah, and that's how it used to be, and that seems a fair, and you know, whether it's 10%, whatever, as long as it's the footballer paying the agent, that's fine. But if then the agent goes to the club and said this deal's not going to happen unless you give me 10 million quid, that's fundamentally wrong.
The problem is though, you talk about how the players, when you first ask the question, you get manipulated, don't you, into certain situations. So if you're a young player who's doing really well, and say Pogba, for example, he was represented by Mino and he'd got him $100 million deal, he's got this deal. And then basically you sign with that agent because you feel he's the best person to look after your footballing career. You don't really get involved in the negotiation side of things, don't you? So a lot of players are unaware what's really going on.
Mm. Absolutely right. Absolutely right. That's why it should be taken out. That situation should be stopped by the laws of the game, stopping clubs paying agents directly. It's easy. Done. Right, let's move on to something less. Oh, God, one of these. Now, this is horrible because it's to you, Micah, again.
Oh, is it?
And I know what the answer's going to be.
Go on.
Start, bench, sell.
Oh,
for Micah.
Oh, my God.
Alan Shearer, Gary Lineker, Ian Wright.
The power is in my hands again.
It is. And if you sell me again, Mike, me and you are done.
Well, I've already said I've started Alan, so Alan gets the knob. Definitely. Alan is starting.
You know your stuff, Micah.
Deary me.
On the bench, I'm going to go with Gary Lineker.
You've just
and I'm selling
job.
Ian Wright.
That was from Samim Islam. Hamza Adam. It's an interesting one. What do you guys discuss during the breaks?
Oh my God, you don't want to know.
Which breaks? But to be perfectly honest, the way podcasts work, we just carry straight on. And if there's any adverts in the middle, there's adverts. And if there's not, they're added later anyway. So it always seems a bit odd saying welcome back because we've just done. So I've given a bit of a tricks of the trade there, so I shouldn't do. Here's one from Jay Dorian, and it kind of moves on from the Wrighty podcast thing that you said. I overheard Ian Wright tell Gary Neville he got his spin from Lineker. Question is, did any of you try and copy other players' traits, or did you just do your own thing? I think when he meant spin, I don't think he means like political spin. I think he means turning defenders.
Ah, right. I was wondering what he was meaning. Yeah.
Because I'm just a couple of years older than Wrighty. So, and obviously he was kind of, you know, one of those players that didn't play too many England games when I was around. So, so we had plenty of time to watch. Oh, I love Wrighty. I think we all learned. You all learned.
We
from,
did, yeah.
You learn from watching players, don't you?
Mark Hughes, I did. I watched Mark Hughes when I was a youngster. I told you, haven't I? When Chris Nicol left me out to sit and study Mark Hughes, Man United, the way he backed into the defenders, used his body.
Who did you follow, Mike?
Well, what age are we talking about? Because
well, for you, because
when I was 10, I was outstanding up front. I was like Shearer. Henry and Lineker mixed into one, dribbling, pace, skill, the lot.
Canelli, you've been on that gin again.
But when it becomes serious, I model my game on Patrick Vieira.
Which game was that? Well, the one off the pitch. Oh, dear. Fantastic stuff. Ben Neal. Hi, guys. Huge fan of the pod. Question more so for Alan and Gary. Have you got any memories of Roker Park?
Yes.
Me too.
There's a fucking shithole. <You can't. laughs>
Oh, dear. That's
got And make sure you keep that in, because it is. Or was.
For those that don't know, that's the old ground of Sunderland Football Club. I played there a couple of times. They used to call it the Roker Roar. And it, and there was a real atmosphere at that ground, and it wasn't at all a shithole. I mean, disgusting
How
thing
could
to
you
say.
Top that?
I
mean,
I don't know. Question from Ethan. Hi, lads. Love the podcast. Big love from a Mancunian in Tasmania. Question for three of you. We are about halfway through the year. However, to me, no one is standing out as a possible winner for the Ballon d'Or. Being a Man City fan, could Philip fucking Foden be one of the favourites? It's catching on. It's what a nickname, Philip fucking Foden.
That was too aggressive, though.
Yeah.
Philip
no, I know.
Philip
Foden. Fucking Foden.
Yes, that's the one.
That's the way to do it. It's Bellingham. Yeah, it's only mid-April. Bellingham's got a chance. And it's, the Euros will be hugely important in that way, won't it, really? Who wins the Euros, how it goes, who performs brilliantly in that championship. Obviously, elsewhere, yeah, Bellingham and someone like that. Mbappe. It depends who performs in the Euros, really, I think.
I tell you who's the outsider.
Go on.
Anton Griezmann.
Griezmann.
If he has a good Euros, yeah. Atletico are on the good side of the draw. If they get to the Champions League final and can, you know, tactically nullify whoever get there, that was to win the Champions League and win the Euros, Griezmann could be a decent shout.
No, I would go along with that. I mean, teams who do well in the Champions League, so City could be Foden, Real Madrid could Bellingham. I mean, Mbappe, what's he got, 38 or 39 goals, something like that. So if he did well, and then again in the Euros. So yeah, it's still pretty much wide open. But I do think it'll come from those core of players.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say we'll have a new winner this year. Jamie O'Leary. With a young son starting to get into football and wanting to ensure they enjoy it as much as possible, it'll be interesting to hear what things you wish your parents did when you were playing football and what things you wish they would have stopped or didn't do. So this is basically advice for parents watching their kids. Now, go on, Micah. You're a parent of a youngster. What is he? What, seven? Has he started playing?
He's seven. He started playing. He scored 8 goals the other day just for a local team. He's actually very good. But
going
the problem
forward?
Is he sort of just runs everywhere. He's,
are
he's
you
mad.
Sure you're the father?
Sorry.
So what do you do? I mean, I think it's really important because I think you've got to be pretty chilled as a parent, not be too pushy personally, although some people think you've got to be pushy. I just want them to enjoy the game.
Exactly.
Enjoy it, and eventually you'll find your level. As long as you, if you really want it and you have the drive, and you can't make someone have drive if they haven't got it, but enjoy it and you'll find out how good you are. No?
Exactly that. It's difficult, isn't it? Because there's too much pressure on the youngsters now, isn't there? Too much pressure.
Yeah.
The problem with me is I don't really get to see him play all the time because I work Saturdays and the games are Saturday morning. So if I've got to get into a match of the day, I can only watch the first half of the games.
Well, if he scored 8 goals in the game, you probably saw a few of them.
Yeah, I saw a few of them. He's been very, very good. I just put my hood up on the sideline. I don't like shout anything. I don't encourage anything. I just let him breathe. Let him enjoy the game. I think that's
absolutely
that's
right. You've got to. You know, when I used to go and watch my son when he played football when he was younger, it used to infuriate me listening to some of the parents shouting.
Oh, it's my hate in the world.
On the sidelines. I was thinking, just let the kids play, man. Oh. Stop swearing. Stop shouting. Stop screaming. Shut up and just let the kids enjoy it.
They have a go at their own kid. They have a go at the referee. It's like, honestly, just let them play. That I remember going to like a couple of games. Forgive me, George. George was, by his own admission, not the most gifted of footballers. I remember standing on the side watching him play one day. He was all right. And he tried and he enjoyed it. And I never said a word. I used to stand on the sidelines, just watch all my kids. I never said anything other than I'd applaud if they did well, and that was about it. And if, you know, even if they didn't. And I remember I was watching George this day, and this mother came up and she said, "Is that your lad up there?" I went, "Yeah, that's George." Yeah, she went, "I thought it'd be better than that."
That's terrible.
That's
awful.
Oh, and also, I remember producer Harry actually when he was young, and Harry is a good player, but he had dodgy feet, and, not in terms of his touch, but he's got plantar fasciitis all his time, and he didn't really have the desire at that stage. And he's listening to this, but he played in this, there was like a tournament, like a 6-7-a-side tournament, and they were doing really well, and they were a pretty good team, and he was a good player, and they played against this team in, I think it was the semi-final, and there's this lad in midfield, and his dad on the sideline, honestly, he was dogs abuse at his own kid the whole time, shouting and screaming at him, and I was thinking, oh, for God's sake, man, leave him alone. And at the end of the game, they lost, and he ran onto him, picked him up by the scruff of the neck, I swear, and he went, "You'll never make it if you play like that." And I thought to myself, I felt like going up to him and saying, "Mate, he's never going to make it anyway. He's not." You just thought, let him enjoy the game. So that is the advice.
Exactly.
Keep your mouth shut. Just clap, applaud, encourage, and that's it. And let them play. And they'll be what they'll be. So on that note, we'll take a break. But as you now know, it's not much of a break because we'll be straight back.
I'm Anthony Scaramucci, former White House Director of Communications and Wall Street financier.
And I'm Katty Kay, U.S. Special Correspondent for BBC Studios. I've been covering American politics for almost 3 decades.
Welcome to The Rest is Politics U.S., brought to you by Goalhanger.
In this pivotal year for the United States, democracy, and world affairs, Britain's biggest podcast, The Rest is Politics, is launching stateside.
Uncovering secrets from inside the Biden and Trump inner circles and how they shape the world's most important economy, but also the global economy too.
New episodes are released every Friday morning.
Just search The Rest is Politics US wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Rest is Football, even though we've gone nowhere and we haven't had a break. Alan Shearer, Micah Richards and myself, Gary Lineker, I'm still here. So Peter asks, "Hello guys, greetings from Kosovo. I wanted to ask, what do you think about the potential appointment of Ruben Amorim at Liverpool? Do you think that he fits in their system?" It does appear that he's that he might be the person getting the job. He's at Sporting Lisbon, and he's been pretty successful. He's over the last few years as he's gradually made his rise in management. Micah?
I think the way he plays tactically, he'd be good. But I did see a quote from him. I think they were quotes, but basically said the rumours about him going to Liverpool are not true. And he wants everyone to stop talking about it, which I did see just yesterday. But in terms of could he be good for Liverpool, definitely. He's really intelligent. He plays attacking football. He's evolved as a manager as well, because he was at Braga, I think, as well. He did okay there.
Plays three at the back, doesn't he?
Yeah. The thing is, though, is can he do it in the Premier League so soon? That's the one question mark you would have. I've heard Liverpool fans saying they would like him. They like his style of football, but you just never know.
There's nothing confirmed on that.
Nothing confirmed yet. No.
Might be one of those, hadn't it, that we've said it before, that it might be the one to take after the one that takes it, rather than after Klopp.
I think that's definitely probably the case. unless they implode towards the end of this season, I suppose. Ryan Gutteridge. Here's a good one. "You all have different roles within TV. Rank the job roles from hardest to easiest. Presenter, pundit, commentator, co-commentator, fight your corner, guys. Go." I would say the hardest is definitely the commentator. I mean, how those guys do it, particularly when they go and, you know, like a FA Cup tie where you don't really know any of the players and stuff, yeah, and they have to instantaneously know. I think it's such a hard job. It's such a skill. I think they're absolutely brilliant, a lot of those commentators. After that, I don't know. Presenter, really, I think. I'll give my own corner there because...
What? You're just reading off an autocue?
Oh, is that what you think? Is that what you think? Yeah. It's a lot easier without OQ, I tell you that. It's the whole bit. Well, you've got to get yourself on air, off air. You've got to ask all the right questions at the right time. You've got to do links. I originally wanted to do that because I thought there wasn't another footballer that was doing it. Bob Wilson did it prior to me, and I thought if I could crack that side of it, that it might give me some longevity in the business. And well, so it transpired, I suppose. What do you think's the hardest?
I think commentator, presenter, co-commentator, pundit.
Mm.
Yeah. In that order.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
I would go commentator, agree. If you ever hear Ian Dennis and John Murray on the radio, oh my, it's just like poetry in motion. It's incredible what they do and how they manage to just talk you through the game, set the tone. Commentators as well in football is really hard as well because people can see what's going on. If you make a mistake.
That's it, on TV particularly, yes, because they can see it themselves. I think we underestimate how good they are, the commentators. Yeah,
they're amazing. Yeah. Then I would say co-coms, because co-coms are the ones that trend on X a lot, aren't they?
They get the most stick.
If you're talking too much, if you're not giving the right amount of depth or opinion, whatever that may be. And then I would say presenter. I say presenter because you set the tone, don't you? It's quite a hard role. I was only joking about reading the auto cue. You have to sort of set the vibe within the show and lift it when it needs to. So a perfect example is that when in the Euros, wasn't it, when Eriksen had basically the heart problem and you had to sort of set the tone. So I think that's very difficult for a presenter to do. And then pundit, it's not easy because...
Well, none of it's easy.
But pundit, you've had time to watch what's going on within the game, haven't you? So you've got time to pick out what you want, whereas presenters or co-coms, or they don't really have that much time. They've got to just work on instinct. So I'd go in that order.
Does that mean I'll be getting hammered doing the co-coms in the England games and the Euros?
100%.
I must say, you've actually been pretty good so far, but that obviously can go wrong. I think my one thing about co-commentators is that if I'd give any advice to any of them, would be don't over-talk.
Yeah.
Because just add something when you think you can actually add something, if you understand what I mean. Don't constantly talk for talking's sake, which some do. But there's a lot of good co-commentators as well. And it's also social media. You should never look at that when you're on telly anyway. They've no idea how hard it is. Of course, biased or...
Exactly.
You make one slight mistake because... I mean, it's... Oh, God. But it's all part of the fun. Yeah. All part of the fun. Last question. Elliot Bennington. Hi, guys. Ooh, 11-year-old Elliot here. No swearing, guys. No swearing on this one. My question is to Alan. No swearing, Alan. How did you decide on your team that you would put out for the next game? Obviously, he's talking about when you're a manager here. Did you have conversations? he wasn't born when you were a manager, this boy. Did you have conversations with the assistant manager and any other coaches? Well, thank you very much, Elliot.
Well, if it was now, Elliot, I would ask you your advice. You might get better decisions than when I picked the team. So just before you two idiots say it.
No, it is actually an interesting question, Alan. Did you just do it? Were you very kind of particular and do it on your own? Didn't seek any advice or did you have...
No, I think you've got to speak to the coaches and you've got to judge how someone's playing, how they're feeling, and... You've got to, follow your instinct, all of the things in training, the matches, confidence, all of those things. Speak to the coaches as well, definitely.
Were you more nervous before a game as a player or as a manager?
Oh, manager. No, there's absolutely no question about it. And you feel so much worse and better, whether you've won or lost, either way, as a manager. There's no doubt about it. You're under more pressure, million times more pressure as a manager than you are a player.
For quite a long time after it, I think you thought you might sneak back into it again. Is it addictive as well?
I think it is addictive. It is definitely. I mean, I suppose it's like scoring a goal, Gary. Once you do it and something goes well and or something doesn't go so well, you want to try and put it right. It definitely. When you see all these guys and in the manager's job for years and years and years, you've got to respect them for what they've been through and what they have to go through, because it's such a tough job.
Did it ever appeal to you at all, Micah?
Have you seen this million-dollar smile? Come on, Gary. I was made for TV.
Yeah, but could you imagine that big million-dollar smile on the touchline you've won a big game?
You know what? I think maybe if my career didn't end the way it did. You know, it was on a low, wasn't it? And I wanted to be as far away from football as possible. You still watch the games. I just wanted to fall back in love with it and enjoy it as a fan. And then luckily I did some media. I met some people and I can see you smiling.
It's just sunk in what you just said. Have you not seen this million-dollar smile? It was made for TV.
Which script are you reading that from? He wants to be a manager of Nando's now, anyway.
Yeah.
I might get my card down next week. If I get my card before I see you guys next, we'll have some Nando's on me.
Chickens on you.
The chickens on me.
Chickens on you. I think that'll do for the question and answer episode. Thank you once again for the questions. They're terrific. I'm going to say something else, but do you want to do my impression of me, Mike, as saying?
Oh, yes. Don't make me laugh. I can honestly just say, guys, the questions have been so brilliant. We are overwhelmed with the feedback. So do keep tweeting us. Do keep watching. And I would just like to say thank you again. Goodbye from me, Gary.
And goodbye from me, Big Meeks.
Goodbye from me, Normal Alan.